next hour. But right now, I want to introduce our friend who's back with us, Rabbi David Ostrich. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice real to close to the edge of the microphone there.
Good
right?
morning.
There we
nice
go.
To be here.
We've had you on before, and I reached out to you originally weeks ago because I wanted to get some kind of, I guess, local reaction to some things that have happened around the country now several weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you take vacations, really?
Yeah.
And you were in the Rocky Mountains.
Rocky Mountains.
What was that like? Where'd you go?
This beautiful. We went from 115 degrees in Phoenix to top of the Rocky Mountains National Park, where there was 6 feet of snow on the ground.
Oh! How do you dress? Are you dressed for all that?
You carry a jacket.
You get a
and
big
you
suitcase.
Take it off.
Wow. Okay. So you went to Arizona,
New Mexico, and Colorado.
Oh, wow.
It was beautiful.
That sounds
really
like a
beautiful.
You've done this before or
nope,
first time?
That was my first time.
First time?
In the Southwest, and it was gorgeous.
Wow.
All those pictures I've seen as a child, I now got to see in person, and it was quite thrilling.
Okay. What was your favorite spot? I've been to Arizona, not those other places.
Our hotel in Sedona, Arizona, is right across the street from these magnificent, they call them rocks, but they're really sort of quasi-mountains.
Okay.
And that was pretty thrilling.
Interesting. All right. Okay. So if the rabbi is not there for a weekly service, is there like an assistant rabbi, or how does that work?
We have lay members lead the service.
Oh,
we have some very learned people in the congregation who can fill in when I'm out of town.
Okay. See, I'm Christian, all right? I go to a church, and they have a fill-in pastor sometimes. The pastor's going to be away, and they call a fill-in pastor who shows up and leads the service and so on. That's not the way?
Well, it just depends on the congregation. Ours is a very small congregation, and we don't have an assistant rabbi or a third or fourth rabbi. So we have members of the congregation, but they're very learned and know what they're doing. So.
Okay. I should know this. Now,
and besides, God is still there. That's the important thing.
Okay. Oh, yes. Okay. I assume there's a synagogue in Altoona?
Yes. Actually, there are two.
There are two synagogues in Altoona. Where? Harrisburg. I assume there's something in
there's
Harrisburg.
Several in Harrisburg.
Okay. At Williamsport?
Yes.
So, in other words, cities have a synagogue. I'm thinking about, you know, there are churches essentially everywhere. I mean, every little town has a church of some kind, or multiple churches.
Yeah. Well, Jews are a minority in the United States, and so therefore, in, you know, places that are not centers of Jewish population, we're fortunate to have one or two synagogues. In large places, there are bunches.
Right.
You know, I think in St. Louis, there are, I don't know, 20 or 30. You know, it's...
Ooh. Okay. Which makes sense.
Chicago, you know, 30 or 40. I mean, you know, it's...
A lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, again, originally I reached out to you weeks ago, and you're like, hey, I'm in the Rocky Mountains. I'm thinking, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt
you. You interrupted me in the Rocky Mountain National Park.
I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
That's the blessing and the curse of cell phones.
You're supposed to take your phone and, like, turn it off and put it away and go enjoy climbing mountains or something. So
what, when I get an email from an important radio personality?
That wouldn't be me, but okay, whatever you want to say there. Obviously, let's start with this, because since then, of course, about not quite 2 weeks ago, Israel and Iran started shooting at each other. All right? And that's dominated the news now for the last 2 weeks, week and a half or thereabouts. I'm just curious, obviously you're Jewish, State of Israel and so on, and what initial reaction to what's been going on in the last week and a half?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing to say is that I'm not a military person. I don't know the ins and outs of the military strategy or weapons and things like that. So, you know, I just sort of am watching with concern. I have family in Israel who are very concerned about the bombs that keep exploding over their heads. You know, even when the Iron Dome catches something, there's still an explosion and there's still debris that falls on the ground. So there's a lot of booms. And so my relatives in Israel have described the fear, and they hunker down in their bomb shelters and things like that. So this is not like fun and games. This is serious business, and it's also serious business for the people of Iran. And, of course, one of the big questions is, are the people of Iran behind the regime that's been ruling them for all these decades that has oppressed them as well as supporting terrorism in other parts of the world? So it's a very difficult situation, and I have no expertise other than to watch with great concern for everybody involved.
Okay. Now, you are American, mm-hmm. all right, but you say you have relatives that live mm-hmm. in Israel. I mean, mm-hmm. do you stay in constant contact?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we...
Okay.
We have, that's cell phones,
All right.
Cell phones or computers, and WhatsApp and that kind of stuff. Right. Yeah, we're in contact quite a bit.
I mean, were they surprised when this whole thing started a week and a half ago? Do you know?
We have to remember, they've been under threat of bombardment for the last almost 2 years because the Houthis and the Hezbollah and, Iran has shot things before. So they're in a state of war. And the young men and women are called up into the army and they go on reserves. And some of my relatives have gone and seen some of the things that are going on over there. I heard a report about one of the giant bunkers, Hezbollah bunkers in Lebanon, where there was like a dormitory for several hundred people, all stocked with, bedding and supplies and all this kind of stuff for people to come in and then sneak into Israel and kill people. So this is a very sobering kind of a sight. So the people over there are under a war situation.
That must be difficult, I would think.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, and they live a normal life. Every time, most of us, all we have to go on is media, mm-hmm. News channels and whatever. And, of course, here we are live in Tel Aviv, and we're live in Jerusalem, blah, blah, blah. You don't really see real life when you watch the TV news. You see little clips, and it's the clips they want you to see.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's one of the criticisms is that the pool reporters go there and they don't go out in the country. They stay in the same hotels. They live in the same apartment buildings. They work at the same bars. They get their information from people who walk in from outside, and so they don't always have a complete picture. They also post pictures. I remember one of my friends, this is already decades ago, one of my friends was on patrol in the Gaza Strip. This is back before 2005 when Israel gave Gaza back to the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. They were marching and he saw, they were on patrol and he saw a bunch of kids playing soccer. And then CNN truck drives up and the cameraman gets out. They come out and start throwing stones at something. And then CNN leaves and they go back to playing soccer. So it's very, very contrived and very, okay. Very, very, very contrived. And I mean, it's very hard to know what really is happening in any situation. But there's a lot of contrived and orchestrated imagery that's being put up for us.
What about on the Israeli side? Is there such things happening on the Israeli side? Somehow. I mean, the TV crews show up and they change and do something different.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is that Israel is an open society where people do all kind of things. So that they have people, the same plaza of people demonstrating for the government, against the government. Whatever debate you have going on in the United States about Israel's policy or Israel's stance or anything else like that, that debate is going on in Israel very vigorously. And when I was there about a year and a half ago, no, 2 years ago now, there was big demonstrations every Saturday night. Thousands and thousands of people in the streets protesting some of the internal policies of the government. There's a lot going on there, and if you have a camera, you can find pretty much whatever you want.
All right, now, from your knowledge or contacts that you have, I've seen multiple stories here in the past week that allegedly, all right, Israel attacks Iran and they start firing at each other and all this sort of thing. The story is essentially saying, well, Israel's a divided country, but now they're united behind the government and taking on Iran. Is that true?
I think it's hard to say on every issue, but I think what you have here is a multiplicity of issues. And on some things, there's agreement, and some things, disagreement. There's questions of judicial reform. There are questions of representation in the cabinet. There are questions of policy in the West Bank and things like this. And there's a lot of division on that. When it comes to defending the country, there's a lot of unity. And I think it's probably similar to something in the United States we may argue. I mean, how many people are very critical of President Trump right now, but they may agree with some of the things he does? So it's not, you can't just paint one broad brush over everything and describe it all. It's complex.
All right. Now, there's a ceasefire because essentially we got involved mm-hmm. the other night. You happy about that? You not happy about that? Israel is a small country, but powerful. I mean, they've got some punch. And clearly, whatever they did with Iran a week and a half ago, taking out leaders, and I mean, is incredible. But, you know, we finally get involved with our stuff the other night. Mm-hmm. Are you, I don't know, happy about that, or we shouldn't have got involved? I'm just curious.
I'm watching with great concern. I mean, I think that I'm very concerned about Iran as a sponsor of state terrorism, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, things like this, and wherever else they're involved. They're also involved in Iraq, don't forget. I'm very concerned about that. I'm very concerned about the people in Iran being oppressed by this Mullah regime. To the extent we can minimize that damage in the world, I think that's really helpful. Particular military strategy, I don't know enough about military strategy to comment on that.
Okay.
But I'm watching with great concern.
All right. I would like to think that we're at a turning point in history, but we've been in turning point in histories before, and it melts away. All right. I'd like to think that this is something.
Well,
from whatever context you are, do people in Israel feel that way? Like we're on the cusp of something.
I don't know. You know, I mean, I think people hope for that. That I just saw something in the paper today. It says something about that. That hope more than thankfulness is the key to happiness in life. And I think that people are hopeful. In the midst of whatever this war is, people going off to war and things like this, and people still get married, they have family reunions, they do things together, they work, and I think this is the way of life, to try to keep working so that when the peace comes, please God, we'll be able to continue.
All right. Let's take a break here. All right. Rabbi David Ostrich is our guest. Again, when I originally reached out to you a few weeks ago, it was about these incidents happening here, mm-hmm. not here, but in our country. And, you know, how are Jewish groups, reacting to that sort of thing? So that we'll take our break. And I want to get more into that, because the stories, again, just some of them are mind-boggling. Like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
So, folks, let's take a break here, all right? You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. Good conversation this morning. We'll have more of it right after this.
98.7 The Fox.
Have you checked out our new website, 98.7thefox.info? When you do, be sure to scroll to the bottom, enter your email address. Then sometime soon, you'll be a 98.7 The Fox insider with our newsletter feature, thoughts from some of our hosts that you won't get on our shows, messages from sponsors, and even special deals as an insider newsletter exclusive. We'll take good care of your email address, no sharing or selling. Hope you'll join us on 98.7thefox.info and enter your email address at the bottom. Be an insider, only from 98.7 The Fox.
Hey, how you doing? Welcome to XYZ Printing.
My son's soccer team is looking for new jerseys.
Well, I can do that.
Something in green with white lettering.
No problem at all. Right here in this box.
Those are white shirts.
Not for long.
Just because someone says they make custom t-shirts doesn't mean they're from Pamp.
What's the name of Yun's team up there?
The Tigers.
Is that with one G or two?
For quality you can see and wear, remember PAMP for customized t-shirts, letterheads, envelopes, magnetic signs, and business cards. PAMP has a low minimum of 12 shirts for printing and no minimum on embroidered items. They don't charge art fees or setup fees. Pricing is simple and easy, and they have a quick turnaround. They're open Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Located at 136 South Harrison Road, Pleasant Gap. For more information, call 814-359-2447.
Lezer Lumber Great Outdoor Sale now through July 5th. Special pricing on TimberTech and Trex decking. See all our railing options, plus solar and LED lighting by RDI. The best in siding and roofing materials, as well as your summer fix-up. Fixing storm damage and new build projects. Ask about our new Best Plus plastic lumber. It's a long-lasting, affordable solution. Financing available. See all the outdoor living options at LezerLumber.com. Lezer Lumber. Decks built to be legendary.
Save big and head to your local Toro dealer, Maxwell Equipment, for the spring sales event going on now. Stop in today and get up to $1,500 off select Z-Master mowers and Grandstand, Multi-Force, Stand-Ons, plus $500 off select attachments. Visit Maxwell Equipment on Shiloh Road for more details on promotions and financing offers. Toro,
Count on it.
Sports fans flock to the We Are Inn in Phillipsburg for fun, great food and drink, and to cheer on the Nittany Lions. Now, coming to State College soon, visit the new Happy Valley Live by the We Are Inn next to the Hampton Inn, the former Damon's Restaurant. Happy Valley Live will become your go-to spot for sport, great Italian and American cuisine, the best bar in town, special rooms for parties and meetings. It's a Penn State fan's dream, just down the street from Beaver Stadium and the Jordan Center, and they're hiring. The countdown is on. The new Happy Valley Live is coming soon.
You've got to feed the beast. Whether your beast is a horse, pig, or cow, or a dog or cat, or even the birds, let the Center Hall Farm Store help you feed the beast. And the Center Hall Farm Store can help you get your lawn, garden, and orchard growing strong. Stop on in at 110 West Allison Street in Center Hall, or check out our website at centerhallfarmstore.com. And let us help you feed the beast.
Your sports radio.
Broadcasting live, loud and proud from Central PA Sports Authority.
Woo-hoo!
WFXS America.
98.7 The Fox State College.
All right, now we're not getting married. Although I noticed that Jeff Bezos, the super, super, super rich guy, he and his girlfriend are finally getting married in Venice, Italy, and apparently the people in Venice are not happy about it because he's taking over the town, and they hate that. Anyway, so I didn't want to play wedding music, but what the heck, it's Hooked on Classics. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. Our friend Rabbi David Ostrich, our guest on the program. You have given me an invitation to come visit your synagogue for a Friday night service, and I will absolutely take you up on this, maybe sometime in August. We'll see.
Okay, you must welcome.
Obviously, you do weddings.
Yes.
Right? What's a I'm actually going to a wedding here in a few days. What's a Jewish wedding like? I've never been to a Jewish wedding.
Well, I think, you know, from the outside, it's pretty similar to a non-Jewish wedding, not like a Catholic. We don't have to have a mass or anything like that. But a Protestant wedding, you basically get everybody together, you say some things, and the people are married. We have certain rituals we go through. Technically, there are two parts of the wedding. One, where we ask the people if they take each other, technically the betrothal, and then we chant some wedding benedictions, thanking God for our lives and for our blessings and for the joy between a man and a woman. And then we ask them again, and they put the ring on their finger. So in a sense, there are two times they get married, two times they have to assent to it. There are various Jewish blessings and songs and readings and things like that. So it definitely has a Jewish ambience, but from the outside, it's basically we get together, we say some holy words, and the people emerge married.
Now, we just played the wedding march. You don't have that,
That was Mendelssohn. That was the recessional.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Do you use that? You don't do that.
Some people, the music is a matter of people's choice.
Oh, okay.
There's been a controversy about the dun 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 dun,
yeah,
dun
that
because
one.
That's by Wagner, and Wagner was known as an anti-Semite, and so some people feel like that is inappropriate. And I remember actually it was a big controversy 30, 40 years ago when Zubin Mehta, who is the conductor
director
of the New York Philharmonic, but also of the Israel Philharmonic, introduced played Wagner for the first time. This was, I guess, in the 70s or 80s. And big controversy because of Wagner. Not only was he anti-Semitic, but his music was used by the Nazis as part of the staging of their big rallies and things like that. Mm-hmm. So some people think it's permanently tainted. Others say, no, it's just music. And so that's one of those conversations that goes on.
I'm curious, what do you think? Tainted or no? If Wagner was played at your synagogue, how would you feel?
I would say it depends on what the people wanted, if the people wanted it. You know, I would explain the issue and let them make their decision. That's the nature of Reform Judaism.
Okay. Actually, okay, I'm learning some things here. All right. Reform Judaism versus what?
Orthodox Judaism.
What's the difference?
They are much more fundamentalist and believe that Judaism should stay the way it was many centuries ago without any changes for the modern world. Reform Judaism believes that Judaism has been an evolving, developing religious civilization that has gone through a number of reformations and reorientations over the years, and that similar things in modern times are appropriate. And so we let people make their own decisions as opposed to telling them what God wants them to do.
All right. Now, your congregation is not Orthodox.
Ours is Reformed.
It's Reformed. Okay. Interesting.
Not Reformed, no E-D, just Reformed.
Just Reformed.
There's a Christian group called the Reformed.
Yes.
But this is Reformed.
Okay.
No
right.
E-D.
And then after the wedding, there's a big reception?
Yeah.
All right. Food, dancing, music.
Yeah, depending on what the family wants, you know.
Interesting.
Some people have a more Jeff Bezos kind of wedding. Some people have a more simple event.
Yeah, his is, I've got it somewhere. This guy is
$3 million, I heard.
He's like a $30 or $40 million wedding. Now, granted, the guy runs Amazon, and he's got a space company or whatever, so he's got loads and loads of money, and he's trying to essentially take over the city of Venice for his two-day wedding, which is supposed to be tomorrow and Friday. Holy moly.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Well, now, again, out of my budget, so I really can't comment.
Out of my league. All right. Holy. I have two daughters married off, and I'm still paying bills. So, hey, Bezos, send me a check, will you? When I reached out to you a few weeks ago, it was because of these recent incidents that we've had. Two young people in Washington murdered, essentially, I guess, because they were Jewish.
Yeah.
And that incident...
Actually, one wasn't even Jewish.
I thought they were both Jewish.
No, one was Jewish, one was not Jewish.
Oh, okay.
As I understand it. So, but whatever, whether...
They were dating, they were going to get married.
They're part of an Israeli delegation at an international
event. And this person... And whatever that was out in Colorado, some type of a protest, and some guy shows up with Molotov cocktails, and he's going to throw it into this crowd of people, actually managed to set himself on fire. That was interesting. Are you folks worried about this? I mean, these are very open public events that are going on.
It's terrible, and it's terrible that people would think that this would make a difference or resort to these things. It's a shame for these people to waste their lives by doing this, because their lives are pretty much over. They're not going to make a statement that anybody's going to really hear. So it's a total waste, and it's also causing harm. We are obviously concerned. We have been for many, many decades. Things like the pogroms in Europe and the Nazi atrocities, these don't go unnoticed, and there's a kind of an ancestral genetic memory that goes on in communities, any of communities that have faced oppression in the past, and so they're always sort of looking over their shoulder. And we have an extensive network of defense organizations and connections with the law enforcement and to make sure that this kind of stuff doesn't happen. I could say that the State College Police and the area police are very, very helpful with us, and they're very kind to us. In fact, I heard about the Tree of Life massacre from Chief John Gardner.
Pittsburgh. That was in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, in Pittsburgh. Yeah. But I heard it from – he was at a football game. It was a home football game that weekend. He was very involved in all that, all the law enforcement there. And he called me up and said, you know, we heard about this, and we want to make sure that we're sitting controlled by the synagogue. And so we feel very gratified. We feel very gratified that there is a active defensive presence and awareness. And of course, we are vigilant ourselves. So it's scary. It's like you go to a big city, you walk down the street, you have to be careful where you are and who's lurking around. In this particular case, sometimes people come out of the woodwork and it's, can cause a lot of harm.
Has it always been this way?
Well, always meaning, you know, 2,000 years, 3,000 years, there's always been danger out there. There have been times in the United States where it's been more peaceful and where this kind of anti-Semitic violence was not acceptable. But on the other hand, the temple was bombed in Atlanta in early 1960s. Temple was bombed in Jackson, Mississippi. Radio personality was killed in the 1970s in Denver, a Jewish radio announcer. You know, there have been these attacks. I grew up in the South, and we were always very fearful of the Klan. Now, in my part of Louisiana, There was no Klan, because the Klan not only don't like blacks and Jews, they don't like Catholics. And I grew up in Catholic Louisiana, so
interesting.
The Klan was not present there, but there was present other places, and so people had to be very careful, but and be vigilant. This kind of stuff was, you know, it's sort of part of life, and it's, you wish it weren't, but it is, and so we have to be careful.
Okay. I mean, when you first heard, again, this is several weeks ago when these incidents took place now. When you first heard about those, what did you have an immediate reaction? Like, oh, we got to do something, or?
It's just terrible. I mean, this is, you know, it comes up from time to time, and it's, each time is terrible, and the victims do not deserve it, and the perpetrators are somehow twisted and somehow thinking this is going to make a difference as opposed to really wasting their lives. It's just terrible, and we appreciate the support, and we appreciate the law enforcement that can sometimes stop these things and sometimes can, you know, find the perpetrators.
All the college protests that have taken place, we'll say recently, mm-hmm. all right, like in the last, you know, 2 years or thereabouts, they haven't happened here. Really? I mean,
a little bit here, but not much.
Compared to Penn, Harvard, Columbia, for whatever reason, Ivy League schools. But it's been relatively quiet here, which mm-hmm. is a good opinion. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. You surprised?
Well, Penn State,
big school.
Well, it's a big school, but it's not a very political school. I think it's just different atmosphere here than in other places. Columbia is sort of well known for their political activism, and they've, you know, over the decades. But there's a difference in activism and terrorism, and the kind of things where they won't let people walk on the quad to get to class because they're judging that whether that person is Zionist or not Zionist, or you know, calling for the death of students. This is not activism. This is not free speech, and. I think it was pretty embarrassing for those schools when the presidents could not justify their actions in front of the Congress and in front of the country. You think the smartest people in the country, which is the presumption about those places, would be able to figure out the difference between free speech and political discourse and calling for the murder of other students. It would never be allowed for other marginalized groups, and it was just shocking. It was shocking and it was disappointing. And I think this kind of disappointment is fueling a lot of the resentment about those colleges, both in politics and in the private donation world of private donations.
I'm going to assume your congregation, I don't know, takes precautions. Does every Jewish congregation take precautions now?
Yeah.
Like what?
Well, some have guards when they open the doors. We have security systems and things like that, and. You know, we have to be vigilant.
That would drive me nuts. I mean, well, my church on Sunday morning, the doors open, people walk in.
Exactly. It's not the old days of keeping the building. I remember when I was in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, the local Episcopal church kept their doors open 24 hours a day.
Yes.
365 days a year, and the homeless would come and sleep in the pews. And at one point, one of the homeless people like goes to steal some of the silver, the gold from the ark, and the other homeless people stopped him and said, no, this is where we sleep. You got to treat the place with respect. And so it was, you know, that is the way it used to be in a lot of places, and unfortunately we're not in that situation anymore. So it's regrettable, but we need to take measures to protect ourselves.
Actually, I'd be curious to know how many churches somehow still do that. I mean, my church where I go is a country church. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we used to keep the door open. Now we don't, primarily because the insurance company has told us you must lock the door when you're not there. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the idea is a church should be an open place. You should be able to go. If you want to go at 10 o'clock at night, you can go in and pray and so on. No, now we have to lock the doors because the insurance company says so.
Yeah.
That's not what you folks are facing.
No, it's not that at all. I mean, we are concerned about attacks. And so we have means, and we have, you know, security measures.
Okay.
And it's a shame. It's a shame. And,
okay. All right. Again, it's been a good thing. It's been very quiet here. Mm-hmm. Now, things, I guess, have calmed down in those other places, although, I mean, you just said, you know, they're very, I guess, politically active places. For whatever reason, Ivy League schools are supposed to be, which I don't understand, politically active. Why they can't just be universities and colleges and just teach people? Why you got to do this other stuff? You don't ever see anything like that happening here. Or could it?
Little bits and pieces that people try to do that. They have professional organizers come and try to be rabble rousers, that kind of stuff. And what I find interesting there and here as well is that when you have these protests on subject A, there are people who are interested in subject B, C, D, E, and F who come and glom onto it. So if you pay attention to the demonstrations here, other places, it's not only against, say, Israel's policy in Gaza, but also for socialism and for, you know, for this, that, and the other. And it's interesting. I mean, I just take an example. You have the Black Lives Matter movement that started many years ago, and it took an obviously true thing that Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you had glommed on to anti-capitalism, anti-Zionism, you know, this, that, and the other, and you had all these people sort of join the official group, and it really twisted the whole idea, which was simply a sentiment and a truth that Black Lives Matter, and turned it into something, a political force, but it wasn't, it was far transcended what the original idea was. And many people were turned off because of that, I mean, it's just the fact this is years ago. I went to a political seminar on one subject, and when the guest speaker came to speak, she went on for, I bet it was 20 minutes, it might only have been 10, of identifying all the liberal causes that she agreed with. Lest we think, oh, well, you're okay on A, but not on B. And it was like a ritual declaration, and it was shocking to me. I mean, you find the same thing in Republican politics. You know, can you agree on A but not on B? Well, yes, that's the nature of politics. But people want to try to have purity and litmus tests and things like that, and it can really sour some of these projects.
We've talked about this recently. Mm-hmm. We'd love to have John Fetterman on this show sometime. He's more than welcome. I've put invitations out there, not expecting much. Is John Fetterman Democrat enough right now? So, yeah, we've...
Yeah, I really feel like there's a hit job going on him right now, claiming mental health problems. I mean, he's been admitting the mental health problems, but I really... All these accusations against him sound like a hatchet job. And I was disappointed in Connor Lamb, for whom I voted in the primary last time, who's attacking John Fetterman because, I think John Fetterman's great. And I think that Taylor Swift says haters going to hate, so politicians going to politic. So perhaps that's what Mr. Lamb is doing. But I just feel like, I think Fetterman is an example of somebody who's trying to approach individual subjects independently. And he's getting a lot of criticism from people who want to be all A or all B. And I think he's an open-minded person who is going for real improvement.
Uh-huh. Well,
and he agrees with me on Israel, so uh-huh. I like that.
Well, yeah, he's a big Israel supporter.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you listen to what he says, he's very intelligent. He's not just doctrinaire. He analyzes the points and he talks about the individual details, and he's quite intelligent and quite well read about this, and it makes a lot of sense. And if he sees President Trump doing something right, he's going to say so. And if he sees him doing something wrong, he's going to say so as well. So, to me, that's refreshing and helpful.
All right. We'll take a break in a moment. Can you stay for another segment?
Yeah.
Or are you out of time? Okay, because I've got some thoughts I want to toss at you. But one final question, all right? Occasionally, we will have a pro-Palestinian rally, usually down at the Allen Street mm-hmm. gates, people chanting, signs, the whole nine yards. We've had, I would say, several of those. What do you think? What's your feeling when those sort of things happen? I mean,
I think that's an example of what I talk about, glomming together all these different things. Are they really for the Palestinians who are oppressed by Hamas, who are not served well by the Palestinian Authority? What about the rank and file Palestinian, the average person Palestinian who are not treated very nicely? If you have feminists or gay people you know, quote, for the Palestinians, what about the plight of women in these Arab countries who are not treated equally at all? What about the gays and lesbians who are not treated equally well at all over there? So if you for, quote, the Palestinian people, you know, which political groups are you choosing to support, and are those groups actually helping the Palestinian people? I wrote an editorial about this in the CDT a while back, and it's like, who loves the Palestinians? And the fact is, the Palestinians have the best life, and with more political rights and more economic prosperity, are those Israeli citizens, Arab Israeli citizens, or Palestinian Israeli citizens. They have the best lives of any of the other Palestinians, or pretty much any of the other Arabs in the whole area, because they have more political rights. And so who loves the Palestinians? Hamas doesn't. Hezbollah doesn't. The Houthis don't. I don't think the UN does.
Really?
You know, no, the UN is just perpetrating all kind of terrible things to the Palestinians. So it's like, you know, it's a question of what governmental entity is going to help them. And I think when people are, quote unquote, supporting Palestinian rights, they're not really supporting the Palestinians. They're supporting a particular political group who may be using the Palestinians for some other agenda. And it's terrible.
All right, let me take our break here.
Okay.
I've got some follow-up questions. We'll do one more segment. Again, our friend Rabbi David Ostrich is our guest. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. Some interesting discussion this morning. We'll have some more after this.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead.
Ironhead and the Goon.
Exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox.
Interest rates and inflation are out of control. Is your credit card debt also out of control? It's time to resolve your debt and take back control for a lot less than what you owe. If you have $10,000 or more in credit card debt, then you need to call us right now. Debt Fix Pros can significantly reduce the amount you owe, and you could be debt-free faster than you think.
I knew we had to do something. Our debt was growing.
It was getting out of control, and we just didn't know what to do.
We saw an ad for Debt Fix Pros. We called, and they showed us how fast they could get us out of debt.
It really was amazing, and now we're back in control.
Call now, and we'll show you how easy it is to fix your debt. The call and consultation are free. Call Debt Fix Pros right now. Call 800-930-0388. That's 800-930-0388. 800-930-0388. Our military heroes deserve our thanks. Patriotic Hearts is there to assist those in need, especially in the transition back to family and civilian life. You can help by donating an unwanted car, truck, SUV, or van. Your donation supports the programs that make a difference in the lives of veterans and those actively serving our country. Call today for a fast, free pickup. Your donation will not only be greatly appreciated, but will also qualify as a tax deduction. Call 800-917-1544 to help our military heroes. Call 800-917-1544. Operators are standing by 24/7. Patriotic Hearts, helping our soldiers and veterans live a better life. Call 800-917-1544. That's 800-917-1544. Together, we can make a difference.
Are you looking for the best pizza in town? Look no further than Brothers Pizza in downtown Belfont. Good, fast, and did I mention really good? Brothers Pizza also delivers to the immediate area, but you can also enjoy sit-down dining with convenient on-street parking. For fast, friendly delivery, call 355-5581 or stop by at 102 North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfont. Brothers Pizza, downtown Belfont.
Have you checked out our new website, 987thefox.info? When you do, be sure to scroll to the bottom, enter your email address. Then sometime soon, you'll be a 987 The Fox insider with our newsletter feature, thoughts from some of our hosts that you won't get on our shows, messages from sponsors, and even special deals as an insider newsletter exclusive. We'll take good care of your email address, no sharing or selling. Hope you'll join us on 987thefox.info and enter your email address at the bottom. Be an insider, only from 987 The Fox.
Lezer Lumber Great Outdoor Sale, now through July 5th. Special pricing on TimberTech and Trex decking. See all our railing options, plus solar and LED lighting by RDI. The best in siding and roofing materials, as well as your summer fix-up. Fixing storm damage and new build projects. Ask about our new Best Plus plastic lumber. It's a long-lasting, affordable solution. Financing available. See all the outdoor living options at LezerLumber.com. Lezer Lumber. Decks built to be legendary.
Stay big and head to your local Toro dealer, Maxwell Equipment, for the spring sales event going on now. Stop in today and get up to $1,500 off select Z-Master mowers and Grandstand, Multi-Force, Stand-On, plus $500 off select attachments. Visit Maxwell Equipment on Shiloh Road for more details on promotions and financing offers. Toro, count on it.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead.
Ironhead and the Goon.
Exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox.
I don't know, Rabbi, do you like classical music?
Oh, yes.
You do? Okay, all right. Well, then this
was in Arizona, we listened to the Eagles.
Okay.
And we went to Winslow, Arizona, and we saw the statue of the guy hitchhiking.
Okay. When I say classical, I'm thinking like Mozart.
Oh, yeah. No, I like that, too.
Okay. All right. Classical music. No, the Eagles.
You want to get controversial, I prefer Bach to Mozart. But
why? Why is that?
You just do.
Okay.
It would take about 20 minutes to explain, and I probably wouldn't do a good job, but I like Bach more than Mozart.
But that's hilarious. Classical music. Oh, yeah, the Eagles. Like,
I was saying, I meant to oppose that. Whatever.
But, hey, I love the Eagles.
Remember, I'm not responsible for anything I say or do. Just remember that. So.
I was thinking Mozart, Eagles. Yeah, they're equal. Yeah, okay. Just a few more minutes with our guest, Rabbi David Ostrich from the name of your congregation is what again?
Brit Shalom.
Brit Shalom.
The Covenant of Peace.
Okay. So again, you've invited me to a service Friday night. I've never been to a Jewish service. I want to come. Maybe sometime in August, I'll drop you a line.
Please.
I just want to sit in the back of the room. I assume there is a back of the room. Yeah. And just watch. All right, that's all I want to do. I just want to kind of take it in.
Well, that's welcome.
Okay.
We have visitors all the time, and we're happy to have visitors.
All right. I want to throw some terms at you.
Mm-hmm.
And give me some definitions of these terms, because they're in the news from time to time, and I think most folks really don't understand what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, the hot one, if you will, is anti-Semitism. Or maybe we should just start with Semitism. What is that exactly, from your point of view?
Well, as in many things, is a controversy. It's a controversial or complex history of the word. The word was first used by an anti-Jewish organization in Germany in the 1870s or 80s, and they identified Jews as Semites because Semites comes from, you know, Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and Shem was the ancestor of the family that eventually produced Abraham and then the Jewish people. So Semite was seen as descendant of Shem. But there are other people in that group, including Arabs and other people, you know, so it can be a convoluted term. But by and large, for the last 150 years, anti-Semitism has been people who are against Jews and Judaism. The conversation these days goes when somebody is critical of something Jewish, either religiously or the people. The question is, are they anti-Semitic? That is, are they anti-Jewish, or are they leveling a legitimate criticism? Sometimes one suspects or one can perceive anti-Jewish bias in whatever they're saying, that they're not being sympathetic, or they're not being judicious. They're just anti-Jewish, and they're going to level accusations of Judaism no matter what the situation. Other times, people may actually be giving a legitimate criticism, as all groups deserve legitimate criticism. So that's what anti-Semitism is, anti-Jewish. And there are a variety of different definitions that different organizations have tried to promulgate, but basically it's anti-Jewishness against Jews.
Okay. I mean, an opinion, mm-hmm. all right? It's like the word racism. Anytime the word racism is just tossed out all over the place now. Oh, you don't agree with me? Racist, you know? And that drives me insane. I see anti-Semitism in the same direction. Anytime you, yeah. oh, no, it's anti-Semitism. It just gets tossed out there.
Well, I think you're right. I know that, like, so for instance, when President Obama was in office, if people would criticize him, someone said, oh, that's racist. I'm like, well, no, maybe he deserves criticism. But on the other hand, there were people who hated him no matter what he did, and because they were racist. In case of anti-Semitism, that's the big question. Are people discussing something that Judaism does or Jews do, or is it simply a way of acting on their hatred for Jews and Judaism? And that's the question with anti-Semitism.
Okay.
Similarly with the word Zionism.
There's the other term I was going to toss out. You hear that one every now and then. I think folks are totally clueless. What does that mean? What does that mean?
Okay, well, first of all, Zion is a mountain in Jerusalem. It was where David had his ancient city. Because the modern city of Jerusalem has grown quite a bit. Right. And even after Solomon, it grew quite a bit. But Zion was the mountain. And in the Psalms, Zion is identified as sort of the word used to identify Jerusalem as a whole. And then at some point it became also a way to symbolize all of the land of Israel. In the 1890s, Theodor Herzl, who was a journalist from Austria, convened an organization called the World Zionist Organization, World Zionist Congress, and they decided they were going to try to reestablish a Jewish state, the ancient Jewish state that existed many times before. And they called it Zionism, meaning the Jewish nationalism, that they wanted to Jewish people to reclaim their own country, their own nation. They called this Zionism. Zionism is the belief that Jews have the right to have their own nationality and their own country. How they got the country is where a lot of discussion goes on. Mm-hmm. Given, taken, robbed, negotiated, all these different kind of questions are brought up. The Zionist position is that Jews have the right to have their own country in the land of Israel. And how they get along with their neighbors is a matter of great discussion. Whether people, non-Jewish people who live there were long-term residents or recent residents is one of the big questions. Also, the question of who's in control. I mentioned before that there is Israeli Arabs or Israeli Palestinians. There are many people in the state of Israel who are not Jewish, who are Christian or Muslim, and who may be Arabic or other ethnic nationalities. They are all given rights, equal rights. So
they can serve in the government.
Oh yeah, they have had members of parliament who are Arab and Christian and non-Jewish, and then there are also actually secular people who are Jewish by biology and Jewish by ethnicity, but not Jewish religiously. So it's similar to the United States in that there's a lot of different people from lots of different backgrounds, lots of different opinions, all working together in a democracy.
Okay. Help me out. Somewhere in there is a line as far as, like, the leadership of Israel is concerned, all right? Mr. Netanyahu right now mm-hmm. is the prime minister, okay? Could somebody who's Arab or, I don't know, Christian, whatever, eventually become prime minister of Israel?
Yeah.
They
yeah.
could.
Yeah.
I thought that person would have to be Jewish.
I mean, think practically. Because of the nature of the Jewish, most people are Jewish, and I think it's improbable, but it's theoretically possible. And there have been Arabs and Christians and Muslims in the Knesset and in the government.
All right, 2 minutes. I'm going to throw an impossible question at you. Is there an answer to I'll call it the Palestinian problem, dilemma, whatever? Is there any answer to this so that in the future everybody over there lives peacefully?
Golda Meir, legendary Jewish leader, was reported to have said, we'll have peace. We'll have peace when the Arabs love their own children more than they hate Jews. They won't engage in the war all the time.
Now, she was from the 1970s. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. She's actually, and she was raised in Milwaukee, born in Kiev, raised in Milwaukee.
Interesting.
And then moved to Israel as a young woman. She, if the Arabs want and are allowed by their leadership to live in peace with Israel, peace will happen. If you look at 1982, when Israel gave back land seized in the Six-Day War, when you look at the Gaza given back in 2005, Israel is willing to give land for peace, but it wants peace. And when Prime Minister Netanyahu says there is no partner for peace, I don't think he's saying a hard no. He's saying until there's a real desire for peace and a willingness to live in peace, there's no use negotiating because, I mean, look what happened. In 2005, Israel gave back Gaza. And to the Palestinians, so they have this Palestinian state in Gaza. And what do? They have a Hamas leadership that takes millions upon millions upon millions of UN aid and other aid from other countries, and instead of turning it into a beautiful place, a beach resort, what you could do over there, they built armaments and they built tunnels and they the hospital's in terrible shape because all the money's going into arms, into fights and like that. Remember, in October 6th or 7th, it was an independent Palestinian state that attacked Israel. Israel was not in control of that land anymore. All those people who were killed at that music festival in Kibbutzim were attacked by people from the Palestinian state over in Gaza. That's is this what freedom brings? Is this a partner for peace? If the Arabs will want peace and will be allowed by their leaders to have peace, then Israel will give land for peace and will make arrangements. Nobody in Israel wants the war. Nobody wants to continue wars. Nobody wants to send their children off to fight. But if it's necessary for safety, they're going to keep doing it.
We're out of time.
Okay.
Well, I enjoy talking to you, and then I learn some things pretty much every time I do. Maybe you don't necessarily agree on everything, but that's okay. Not a problem. So thank you. I'll be in touch when I can come to a service sometime.
Oh, you're most welcome. As anyone else wants to come visit, we're happy to have visitors.
Okay. Your services are Fridays, 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
All right. And you have a website, so
yes,
you can look up the website. Again,
BritShalomStateCollege.org.
That's the website address. Mm-hmm. BritShalomStateCollege.org.